The Philippines tends to excel in B-sports, doesn't it? Basketball, billiards, bowling, and, of course, boxing. At the time of writing, Manny Pacquiao has only just recently lost his bout against Yordanis Bugas. Pacquiao, from his soundbites and news interviews, seems very shaken by all of this. He says that he is now seriously considering that this is the correct time to retire. He should consider himself lucky. He has his dubious career in politics, terribly problematic statements aside, and acting, lack of acting talent aside, to fall back on. And he has had such a historic career and world-changing wins. There are many Filipino boxers and athletes of all kinds out there that never even got their shot, for reasons far beyond their control. Hello and thanks for tuning in. This is Sunny, so welcome to Yugto, a podcast where we get mad about Filipino history. You join us today in our fourth episode of our second season, where we've focused on some of the countless Filipino sports heroes we've had over the century. If you can believe it, we aren't getting mad at the government today. No, today we acknowledge powerlessness. We acknowledge that sometimes we do not know what might happen tomorrow. And we acknowledge the human limitations of the athletes that we look up to. That they might look superhuman as they do what they do best. As they stand on podiums and wear medals around their neck after training for years and years. But that ultimately, they can be as fragile and as in need of help as you or me. Today we remember and reflect on the athletes in Filipino history who died before they could truly realize what they were capable of. And who better to have as our focus than the Filipino boxer that shares the name of a famous Mexican revolutionary. Before Manny Pacquiao, before Onyok Velasco, Leopoldo Cervantes, and Anthony Villanueva, there was Pancho Villa. Pancho Villa lives on in the annals of world boxing, considered to be one of the most formative and iconic Asian boxers in world history. Some even calling him the greatest Asian fighter ever. This is his glory, and this is his tragedy. It is 1901, the turn of the century. 4 years after the Philippines declared its independence from the Spanish, only to be captured by the Americans. 2 years before Teofilo Ildefonso, the first Filipino Olympic medalist, is born several islands away. And 29 years before Jose Villanueva wins the first ever Olympic medal for boxing for the Philippines. Francisco Gilledo is not very tall at all. If he was born nowadays, in the age of dating apps, I expect not many would have matched with him if he had put in his bio that he was only a bit over 5 feet tall. Or maybe people would have swiped left because of his reputation. Gilledo was scrappy. He was often getting into fights with other boys his age in his barrio of Ilog, Negros Occidental. Or would people swipe left because he was merely the humble son of a goat herder? At the tender age of 11, Gilledo does a rather adult thing and sails to Iloilo City to try to strike it out on any work that is not farm-related. He starts as a bootblack, shining the shoes of wealthy Americans and Filipinos as they pass by. It's not an easy thing, but it is a living. At the very least, there's boxing. Young Gilledo's taken to the sport since a friend introduced it to him. Less than 5 feet and only 80 pounds, Gilledo is not exactly the poster image of a future boxer. But he takes to the sport and falls in love quite quickly. He likes fighting. This, it seemed, is what all his scraps as a child was preparing him for. Boxing became a hobby, and possibly an extra way to earn money. Said friend convinces Gilledo to go with him to the Filipino city of opportunity, Manila, to find loftier work than just being a bootblack, and to find better people to box with. The two settle in Tondo, and of course they do continue boxing. It is through pure skill that Gileado begins to attract local attention. His name begins to become well known as his friends and sparring partners spread the word, and local spectators begin to anticipate his fights. His fighting style was, quote, explosive and unrelenting. He was unstoppable. With heaps of stamina and power, even when up against opponents bigger than him. It is 1919. Gileado's dream finally comes true at 18 years old. He has his first professional fight against one Alberto Castro. He wins handily and begins an illustrious career. Around this time, his reputation reaches the ears of Frank Churchill. Churchill was a promoter based in Manila. He saw what everyone else did in Gileado and wasted no time taking him under his wing. Gileado is rebranded Pancho Villa, a name that rolls off the tongue and rings a bell. Perhaps to bank on existing name recall and appealing to the racist sensibilities of people abroad who would conflate this boxer with that revolutionary. Perhaps because of his ability to fight and strike the same nervousness in his opponents. Pancho Villa is a massive success. Only 2 years in the scene, he fights his way up the ranks and, before anyone knows it, becomes the Philippine flyweight champion. He even adds to his legend with a little bit of drama. Remember my little quip about people swiping left because of his height? Well, someone did swipe left in real life. A girl Villa liked turned him down, and he was so distressed at all of this that he dramatically left Manila and went back to Negros, expressing his intentions to retire. He waited, and sure enough, endless pleas from Filipino boxing fans, peers, and promoters got him back into the ring. He came back cockier and better than ever. It is 1922, and Villa's renown spreads overseas. Churchill and Villa say yes to an opportunity to box in America. Just like that, in the span of a few short years in the professional ring, the once goat herder, once bootblack, is going to go overseas and prove his mettle on the world stage. Villa immediately wins his first bout overseas, and then the next one, and then the next one. Months go by with him fighting different names, both starters and more established figures, in the ring. And every time, he succeeds. His legend grows. By September that same year, he has enough clout behind him to take on his counterpart, American flyweight champion, Johnny Buff. The bell rings, and as is usually the trend with tall white men facing small Filipinos, Buff must have been quite confident in his odds. I wonder how his face looked as Villa weaved and wound, met him blow for blow, and kept charging through rounds, unstopping. It is already round 11 by the time the match comes to an end. Villa knocks out Buff and becomes both the Filipino and American flyweight boxing champion. It is unheard of. Villa's fans all over the world go wild, they can hardly believe it. And of course, even more fans flock to his matches. When Villa lost the American title to Jimmy Wilde the following year, his loss was so unpopular that promoters had to arrange a kind of revenge match to appease the Pancho Villa fandom. Poor Jimmy Wilde wanted a more logical fight against someone with a title, but this wasn't meant to be. Wilde said in a pre-revenge fight interview, "I appreciate the fact that in Villa I am going to meet one of the toughest little men in boxing." Condescending? Perhaps. But Villa was the same confident kid he was in those fights with the boys at the Hacienda growing up. Villa said, "I am in condition, and once in condition, my worries are over. I do not intend to give Wilde a minute's rest while we are in the ring." When Villa walked into the ring at the Polo Grounds in New York City, he was treated to something that no other Filipino till then had ever experienced outside of the country. A crowd of 20,000 screaming his name. "Viva Villa!" they cheered over and over and over. And Pancho Villa smiled, ready to do what he always did. Buoyed by the cries of his supporters, he got his revenge against Wilde, punching him with both hands into submission. He delivered an almost face-shattering hit to Wilde in the seventh round, and that secured Villa the win. The crowd went absolutely insane. And you know what's wild? Get it, Wilde? Jimmy Wilde literally retired after this. That was how traumatic the whole experience was. And Pancho Villa? He had nowhere to go but up. Emilio Aguinaldo was still president then. Yes, that's how old this story is. And he personally extended his congratulations to the boxer. Aguinaldo said, "Congratulations, Pancho. Come back to us and defend your title here." And so Pancho did. He went back home. He was a celebrity. Forget that girl who turned him down ages ago. He could now treat his wife, Gliceria, to the best things. Pancho was beloved in the Philippines. He was beloved in America too, though, unbeknownst to him, the next time he would step foot in the States, it would be his last. It is 1925. Francisco Gilledo has made it. As Pancho Villa, he is a living boxing legend. In his short time on the world scene, he has already fought over 100 times. So, it does not seem like a big deal that Villa is back in the United States, fighting one Jimmy McLarnon in a non-title bout. But it becomes a big deal when Villa loses. What knocks out Pancho Villa is not McLarnon's strength or speed. Rather, it is Villa himself. To be specific, his wisdom tooth. See, earlier in the week, Villa had gotten an operation to have his wisdom tooth removed. A rather routine surgery that countless people go through every day. Given that the art of dentistry was not then what it was today, Villa still found it unusual that his mouth kept hurting and his head kept spinning days after the surgery was over. The dentist advised him to take it easy and to not go through with the McLarnon fight. But Villa's reputation was on the line, even if a title was not. Due to his occupation, Villa suffers blows to the head repeatedly and routinely, and he's walked off all of that and worse. He was known for bouncing back and fighting for back-to-back weeks. This fight was no different. Until it was. Villa was weak and disoriented. His mouth hurt badly. He could barely focus. As Jimmy McLarnon came against him with full force behind every punch, Villa could only think about raising his fists in such a way to defend the jaw that was giving him no end of grief. He landed a few good hits in, of course he did. But he might as well have been punching himself in the face with all the stress the strain was causing him. And of course, Jimmy McLarnon saw all of this, and he did not miss his chance to take one over this supposedly unbeatable Filipino. Pancho Villa lost against McLarnon. It was actually the last fight of his life, but he does not know that yet. At the time, it's just a source of annoyance and a bit of embarrassment. And so, in frustration, he makes his way back to the dentist. Who knows what he expected to hear? Or what the dentist expected to find. But it was a shock for all when the dentist's re-inspection revealed something. An infection. That same day, his dentist made a call that could not have pleased Vilya. They had to extract 3 more teeth. 4 teeth down now. Vilya does not want to listen to the dentist's advice. The dentist says that the infection could worsen and that the stress his body went through via the dental surgeries means that it is better to take a rest for a little bit. Take the week off, he is told. But Vilya is young, a celebrity, annoyed at his recent loss, and looking forward to future wins. How does he spend the next week? Not resting, but going into full-on party mode. Drinks, dancing, chats, and maybe even more late into the night. It's a fun time for Vilya, and it's the last week of his life. One night, long after the parties had settled down, Vilya's then-trainer, Whitey Eckworth, discovered Vilya in distress. Vilya was in debilitating pain, and he said it was coming from his mouth. See, it was not just a toothache, as he might have thought, or as the people he partied with might have reassured him. It was something called Ludwig's angina, an infection of the throat cavity. As it went unchecked and untreated, the infection had worsened. Vilya, described in his time fighting as explosive and unrelenting, could barely move. His throat was so swollen he could barely breathe. One can imagine he was thinking of the dentist's advice then and regretting his conduct. Eckwart rushed his young charge to the hospital, and there they did their utmost to save the star. But there was nothing to be done. The sickness was far too advanced. Vilya died in that hospital. As this season goes, we have or will discuss athletes who are robbed of opportunity because of a lack of support from the Filipino government, because of a lack of care, or because of politicization. But sometimes, we have athletes who are robbed of opportunity of fulfilling their utmost potential, simply because of a cruel twist of fate. Of course, Pancho Villa may have survived had he paid the medical advice more heed, but it is not every day that we can say that a boxer dies from something that originated or was initially read as a simple toothache. Pancho Villa is far from the only person who found a life and career full of promise cut short. Who found a burning passion to pursue glory and bring it back home to the Philippines unfulfilled. Ian Yanyan Lariba played table tennis from a very young age, joining the varsity team at De La Salle University. In her time there, she was named Most Valuable Player 3 times, and was awarded the UAAP Athlete of the Year in seasons 77 and 78. Her star shone so bright that she came to represent the Philippines in the sport at the Rio 2016 Olympics, even being the one to step out bearing the flag during the opening ceremony. Unfortunately, these first Olympics would be her last. Yanyan was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia in May 2017. Less than a year after returning from Rio. She died in late August 2018. She was 23 years old. Keith Absalon won MVP honors during season 78 of the UAAP Juniors for his sport football. He was also crowned best defender and best striker. He graduated and went on to play for the Far Eastern University. One fateful day, Keith was biking around his hometown, Masbate City, with his family. On a day full of laughter and bonding, Keith was blindsided by an improvised explosive device near him going off. This inexplicable blast took his life. The UAAP released an official statement saying he had a bright future ahead of him in the sport that he loved. May his soul rest in peace. He was 21 years old. Rastafari Daralia's skill in wushu could not be denied. He was part of the junior Philippine wushu team and had already won medals abroad, even while still being, for all intents and purposes, a child. Rastafari trained and slept on and off over at the Rizal Memorial Sports Complex. At 3 a.m. one Saturday, Rastafari accidentally fell from the top bunk bed that he slept on. He climbed back into bed without further incident, but a few hours later, he could not be roused. He was taken to a hospital and declared dead on arrival. This incident caused Philippine Sports Commission Chair Butch Ramirez to prioritize the renovation of athletes' dormitories and other sports facilities to make things safer for the athletes. Rastafari was 11 years old. Some of these incidents were preventable, some were not, but all had the same outcome: an athlete dying too young, their dreams dying with them, and their family, teams, and countrymen who were granted so much hope by their presence, left behind to mourn. Today, we share in that grief a little bit. Hearing these stories, we are reminded to better appreciate our athletes who continue to chase their dreams and appreciate that often they sacrifice everything to be able to shoot for the stars. Today, we are angry when those dreams are hindered by poor government support, by antiquated opinions, by social politics with reputations as collateral damage. We are angry because everyone deserves a chance to give their dreams a shot while they still can, because who knows what might happen.
Pancho Villa, Yanyan Lariba, Keith Absalon, Rastafari Daraliay, Teofilo Ildefonso, and the Olympic athletes who all died in the front during the Second World War. All the countless athletes, famous or not, who died before their time. Today, we remember you all.
Thank you for listening. In honor of the memory of Chibi Velez, a sister to a friend of Whip Inc.'s, and herself an athlete with a glittering future who was taken altogether too soon, we promote the Golden Shuttle Foundation for Philippine Badminton Incorporated. The club has helped Chibi and many other prominent badminton players in the Philippines reach their goals. The club currently trains and operates in San Juan. Do support their numerous activities and tournaments if you can. Yugto is narrated, researched, and written by Sunny, and is supported by the Work in Progress team, or WIP Inc. Sources and any subsequent corrections of facts for this episode can be found on the website. Support the Yugto podcast on Spotify, Anchor, and YouTube, or email us any questions at whipinc.ph@gmail.com. Finally, help us get these stories out there by sharing us on Twitter at @yugto_pod, on Instagram at yugto.pod, or on Facebook at yugto.pod.
Join us next week for another episode about the history of Filipino sports.
And remember, activism is not terrorism, truth is not terrorism, and don't waste your vote this coming May. See you next time.